A signature initiative of the Obama administration involves how agencies approach IT. The Cloud First policy asks agencies to see how email, collaboration, and other applications can move to shared facilities. Cloud computing has become an important tool for reducing infrastructure and software costs. But moving to the cloud involves a lot of research and a lot of choices. So to help, we're bringing you a special Federal Drive discussion on cloud computing brought to you by General Dynamics IT.
Our guests this morning are Fred Whiteside, Project Manager for the Cloud Computing Program at the National Institute of Standards and Technology. Good morning. Great to have you.
Good morning.
And Wolf Tombe, the Chief Technology Officer of Customs and Border Protection. Great to have you with us also.
Great. Thank you for being here.
All right. Why don't we start with Mr. Tombe from Customs and Border Protection. Just give us an overview of what CBC is doing with cloud.
Okay, well, CBP is doing a number of things with cloud. But it's important to consider how cloud is represented in terms of different offerings. So we are currently pursuing both a private and a public cloud capability at this time.
And what would you do in the cloud?
Well, there are a number of things. Some of the first things we're looking at are actually consuming services from the cloud. So email is a service. Collaboration as a service, instant messaging as a service. Those are all great opportunities for us to acquire cloud-based services and help reduce some of our costs, hopefully.
And Mr. Whiteside, tell us about some of the NIST activities, because you seem to have a range of activities that cover every aspect of cloud computing.
NIST program is aimed at accelerating the adoption of cloud computing across the federal government. So there are a number of activities that NIST has undertaken that will that are aimed at accomplishing that. Publishing of a technology roadmap that really provides sort of a blueprint for federal managers who have the responsibility of migrating services and applications to the cloud environment. Of course, that's in line with the federal strategy, which outlines the framework for that decision and those decisions.
So the cloud first policy coming from OMB at the start of the Obama administration really accelerated some of the activities at NIST.
Well, NIST is part of an overall PMO that's headed by OMB, and I think GSA has the lead on that. And NIST has a specific role along with other agencies as part of a federal-wide program.
And so some of the NIST documents actually define what a cloud is in the first place, right?
Yes, I believe that was 800-145 that gives a clear definition and now hopefully a standardized definition of what cloud
means. And I've read it.
He has.
Right, good.
He has read it. So let me ask then, as far as where NIST is concerned, and then I want to move to CBP for a second, or CPB. For NIST, you are able to write the standards and to set up the description and to create this path for agencies. But your agency specifically, are you using the cloud in any particular way?
NIST and other federal agencies have identified some services that they'll be migrating. I'm not intimately familiar with NIST's initiatives to move to the cloud. Nor am I really that familiar with what's going on in the rest of the Department of Commerce, because this project is really not focused on implementation. We're really focused on guidance, and so under this program, so that's what one of the activities that I've been primarily focused on is cloud security, and previously the target business use case development portion of it.
And Mr. Tombe, with Customs and Border Protection, why is this so hard to launch into, or is it? It just seems like there's always a bit of a speed bump or a challenge to get an agency all the ducks in a row to make this happen.
Well, I don't think it really is that hard to get launched. So at CBP, even before the Obama administration came out with the 25-point plan and the Cloud First policy, we were already taking a number of steps to move to capabilities that are now being defined as cloud. So we were already looking at things like email as a service and software as a service. We were already looking at transitioning our large applications into architectural alignment with distributed computing, thereby taking advantage of things that now are being called cloud capabilities. So it's really good business practice. I think if you look at what cloud offers, it offers the potential to truly transform how we in OIT provide service. And there's a lot of opportunities around that.
All right. We are speaking with Fred Whiteside, Project Manager for NIST Cloud Computing's program, and Wolf Tombe, the Chief Technology Officer at Customs and Border Protection. This is a Federal News Radio discussion about cloud computing in government, brought to you by General Dynamics IT. I'm Tom Temin, along with Amy Morris, and we'll be right back.
Welcome back to our Federal News Radio discussion. On Federal News Radio 1500 AM, I'm Amy Morris, along with Tom Temin, talking about cloud computing and government. This discussion is brought to you by General Dynamics IT. Our guests are Fred Whiteside, a project manager at NIST Cloud Computing Program, and Wolf Tombe, he's the Chief Technology Officer at Customs and Border Protection. And we're going to start with you, Mr. Tombe, talking about some of the security issues moving into the cloud. Are there any particular security issues that would be unique to your agency when it comes to cloud computing?
I don't know if they'd be truly unique. I mean, one thing we have to always note is that that security is always paramount. I mean, in anything we do, so whatever operation we're providing, we're always thinking about how to make it secure and how to keep the data safe. In terms of cloud, I think one of the reasons we're pursuing both public and private cloud is because of some of the security concerns. So in a public cloud offering, we'll put things such as our public websites and other things that are absolutely non-sensitive information out in those, and I think that's appropriate. When it comes to our internal systems, which are law enforcement sensitive or obtaining privacy data from trade transactions and that type of thing, we're going to be a lot more concerned about the security there, and that is driving us, at least initially, to a private cloud capability.
And either way, you would have to worry about vendors that you use for the cloud provider having security in its own facility. So what do you look for? What are you asking for from would-be vendors in terms of what they need to do to make sure you're satisfied with their security?
Well, and that's a great question, and I think it's really important to note that cloud as an industry is still very young, so things are changing and evolving every day, and you have to be aware of that. And not all clouds or cloud vendors are equal, so you really have to do your research when you're talking about a cloud capability, especially for sensitive information. But what we're looking for are things like, are they, of course, located in the United States? Do they have United States citizens working there that have access to any capability that we have? Are they cleared? Have they gone through a clearance process? You know, those are the obvious things, but we do that with everything. In terms of actually putting data out there, we're looking for how they actually store the data, how it's encrypted, how we gain access to that data, and, in fact, can we encrypt that data so they don't have access to it even though they're hosting the data. And there's a lot of opportunity around that.
Okay, and Fred Whiteside from NIST, you have a big pamphlet there because that's your pet project, is security at NIST. So give us an overview of the guidance that you are providing agencies and the types of security issues you're looking at.
So from a security perspective, as part of the technology roadmap, the security section of that, we took a very practical approach. And, rather than throw rocks at the technology and see how they bounce off and document that, our approach was to look across the federal space and try to identify those issues like Tom just outlined and address those in the document with the objective of accelerating the adoption of cloud computing in mind. So if we could address those priority concerns, then we could alleviate some of the fears and some of the misconceptions and perception issues that may exist with regard to security.
Are most of those fears based on misconceptions, or are they legitimate?
I wouldn't say most. I mean, obviously, cloud is no different than any other technology in that no technology is completely secure. I wouldn't say that a cloud system is any more or less secure. I mean, we're really not talking about that much in a way of new technologies. What we're really talking about is a different way of implementing some of those technologies and deploying them, just like Tom talked about. And I think that what he outlined in their approach is absolutely correct. There are a number of different deployment models and service models that are defined in this definition, and they seem to be leveraging that to meet their requirements, and that's exactly what the federal strategy was intended to do, guide organizations to do exactly that.
I mean, in many ways, cloud is more of a business arrangement than a technology, and so it's a matter of security by proxy almost. Well, that's my opinion. What are you finding in this?
Cloud providers still will have the responsibility to, with regard to doing business with federal government, obviously they're going to have the responsibility of securing their systems and meeting FedRAMP requirements in order for federal agencies to leverage those benefits. But right now, like Tom said, you're talking about cloud computing is very new, and it's going to take some time for those things to be rolled out and implemented.
And you mentioned something important, because there is the FedRAMP process by which, I guess, GSA has the task of certifying cloud providers. How are you working with them? How is NIST working with GSA, that is, in establishing the whole FedRAMP system?
Mm-hmm. So there are individuals within NIST who have been working to leverage the existing 853 controls in that process. So again, these controls are applicable to just about any IT system. So they're being leveraged here in this program as well.
So you're in contact with GSA and they with you on how we're going about this whole FedRAMP. I mean, is it a multi-agency effort to get the FedRAMP going?
Oh, absolutely. There have been at least six agencies, I think, that I'm aware of that have been involved to some degree.
You know what strikes me about this, and I've talked with others about this. I want to get your thoughts, too. And this is for both Fred Whiteside with NIST and Wolf Tombe of CBP. This seems almost like a culture shift or perhaps a little psychological game that you have to play, but you have to work with people, kind of hold their hand to make sure that they're not worried about the security issues. Is there a big culture barrier that you would have to overcome to get this up and running at your agency? I ask both of you.
Well, that's exactly what our requirements document is designed doing.
To overcome that barrier.
Absolutely. So what we sought to do was understand what those security concerns are and address those and provide mitigations where mitigations exist and where they don't, identify activities, that will serve to mitigate those in the future. And I think that will help to alleviate some of the concerns across the federal government and identify what needs to be done to make sure the cloud is secure in the future.
Mr. Tombe?
No, I agree. So anytime you're talking about change that actually verges on being transformative, there's going to be cultural impact on that to any organization, and not just in IT. So in terms of IT, yes, our workforce has to learn new skill sets. The role of the IT specialist is changing and what that job is going to entail. So there's change in terms of that, and that's one of the things that you just have to deal with and help people. But in non-IT aspects, we have to look at the business owners who actually own the data that's in the systems. And they have to be comfortable that their data is now potentially residing in a site that they can't necessarily drive down the street, go into the data center and see the boxes anymore. So you have to deal with the mission space. More importantly, it's transformative in terms of working with our acquisition, our financial, and our procurement people. The opportunities for obtaining services such as cloud capabilities, we don't necessarily have acquisition models that are tailored to that, and that's something we have to work very closely with them on.
You mentioned the ownership of the data. That made me wonder about the legality, mm-hmm. if there is any litigiousness that might go on because of the cloud, or is that just baked in?
Well, no, that's in everything we do, again, and I think as the gentleman from NIST adequately pointed out, this technology isn't really new. It's the business model around how we get that technology.
I see.
So, we do have federal laws that make us do things like certification and accreditation on our systems. Now, we do look at a higher level in terms of our cloud capabilities. So where I think FedRAMP is a great opportunity for a lot of federal agencies, it's CNA data medium. We really need things for our sensitivity with our data to be high. So we have another level of scrutiny and requirement in that area.
We're speaking with Fred Whiteside, Project Manager for NIST Cloud Computing at NIST, and Wolf Tombe, Chief Technology Officer for Customs and Border Protection. This is a Federal News Radio discussion about cloud computing in government, brought to you by General Dynamics IT. I'm Tom Temin, along with Amy Morris. We'll be right back.
Welcome back to our Federal News Radio discussion on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. I'm Amy Morris, along with Tom Temin, talking about cloud computing in government. This discussion is brought to you by General Dynamics IT. Our guests are Fred Whiteside, Project Manager, NIST Cloud Computing Program, and Wolf Tombe, the Chief Technology Officer at Customs and Border Protection.
And we've been talking about some of the liabilities of cloud, namely security, but there's also some benefits that should accrue right away. And so let's talk about what some of the efficiencies that you envision or hope to get from cloud computing. Wolf, why don't we start with you?
Okay, well, there are a couple things in terms of efficiencies. One of which is rapid scalability and rapid deployment capabilities. So that's something that is of tremendous interest and offers a lot of opportunities for us to help meet mission in a much more efficient and effective manner.
So you can add or subtract capacity and that kind of thing?
Absolutely. So, for example, we know that at certain peak periods of time, travel goes up, trade goes up. We have to have capacity for that. Well, today what we do in the legacy model is build that capacity in, have it available. It's there all year round for those spikes. The possibility of not having to pay for all that up front and only pay for it when we need it is pretty enticing.
So it's like having an empty truck sit around until Christmas time and you use it for a week and then it goes back to being empty.
Exactly.
And what about provisioning new users and so forth? I've understood that that's easier in the cloud. Have you found that, or do you expect that to be the case?
We expect that to be the case. I think it's still a little early on to see where some of those efficiencies may come or not.
And what about data center consolidation? Is that tie into your cloud strategy at all? Everybody's under the gun to consolidate data centers.
Absolutely. Data center consolidation, expansion of what we're currently doing in virtualization, and reducing or actually taking better advantage of the hardware. So consolidation is definitely a key driver.
And Mr. Whiteside, NIST has guidance in a lot of areas, including security. What do you know about what the general guidance is on the baseline that you should have to measure before you go into a cloud arrangement in terms of costs and efficiencies?
Well, again, the cloud strategy provides a framework that that guides federal managers through that process of, you know, assessing what they have, assessing what their needs are, and assessing how cloud can impact those requirements. I would also say I think Wolf made an excellent point. These efficiencies are not all just cost. I mean, you're gonna cloud has a potential to provide a lot of efficiencies in a lot of operational areas, and I think that's something that federal managers should really consider and look at.
What are some of those?
Like we've mentioned, the ability to deploy much quicker, the ability to make certain that our projects, as they are launched, are more in step with requirements, where there's quite a bit of lag time right now, as he mentioned in our legacy model. I mean, we go out to our business areas, we gather requirements, and, you know, some 4, 5, 6 months later with procurement, you're looking at maybe launching a project in 6 or 7 months as opposed to, 6 or 7 weeks potentially here. So
saving money, theoretically, it's somehow better for the environment, yeah, because of the consolidation.
Sure, absolutely. And smaller IT footprint, no doubt about it.
Streamlining the process. Is there a downside? What's the downside? Come on, there's got to be a downside. If there isn't one, good too.
I would say one of the things is that there are going to be challenges. So I mentioned that we need to work with other parts of our organizations, finance, procurement, contracting, on getting these things done and done in an appropriate way. So there are definitely challenges, but I wouldn't say they're really negatives.
Right.
It's just a new way of doing business.
So there are a lot of people in this tent.
Correct.
That have to be on the same page at all times.
Absolutely.
And also, I don't know if I would characterize it as necessarily a downside, but I think that cloud has a potential to impact day-to-day operations in that you're going to see a reduction and the need for administrators and efficiencies in those areas.
So it comes back to efficiency.
Yeah, no doubt about it. So you, so I think forethought into, you know, possibly retraining individuals, redeploying some of these individuals is something that I think has to be considered. You know, for example, if you migrate a enterprise-wide email system, well, some organizations may have, you know, 10, 12, 20 administrators for email systems that, because they have, you know, four or five different systems throughout the entire enterprise. So, you know, once you consolidate those and outsource them, you know, you're talking about having to redeploy those individuals and retrain them possibly. So those are all considerations that
So it sounds to me that like the process of getting to the cloud, of deciding what you're going to move and how you're going to move it, also allows you to take a really good inventory and maybe house cleaning of the whole IT structure that you have in the first place. Even if you don't end up in the cloud, you might come up with some efficiencies just by finding out what you can retire and what you don't need.
No doubt about it, yeah.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Well, and in fact, I'd say that taking that inventory is essential to moving to the cloud. Not all applications are necessarily cloud-ready or appropriate for the cloud, and you have to know which application to move and which one not to move.
And that was my next question. What is your decision process like, and what have you found in terms of applications that look, yeah, let's go with that, versus those that you say, let's keep it in-house right now?
Right. Well, the process is we work, with, of course, with our application owners. We also work with our business owners and IT leadership and identify what are, you know, the quick wins and the pretty easy ones to get started. And I already listed those earlier on, and we're pursuing those. So
email seems to be first on everybody's list.
Email is a really easy win, and you know, I want to be focusing our efforts internally on things like our mission capabilities, so our trade systems and our law enforcement systems. You know, email is something that industry can do really well at providing us, and it's a great opportunity to let them do that and let us focus our resources where they need to be.
But that certainly helps me to understand a little bit more about what we talked about a little while ago, which is why this can be such a challenge. It is because it's not just two or three people in a room deciding to move email from one server to another. This is an agency-wide house cleaning, as Tom put it, and looking at everything from top to bottom and taking a scalpel and figuring out what fits where and everybody being on that same page.
Mm-hmm. It certainly presents an opportunity to do that. I think that, you know, starting with applications like your email, for example, and collaboration tools, web services, and the easy, the quick wins, as Wolf pointed out, I think as we move forward beyond those, you have an opportunity to really begin to really impact your day-to-day operations and achieve some of those enterprise-wide efficiencies.
Now, a lot of agencies are going virtual with their applications, virtual machines. That's a way of putting many applications on one machine so that the machines are working hard and you have fewer of them. Easier said than done. Can virtualized data centers or virtualized servers move to the cloud, or is it... Are you worried that you can't find the particular software bundle that's somewhere on a virtualized machine if it's removed once more into the cloud?
Well, that's a great point. So in CBP, we already have a very large virtualization effort that's been underway for several years. So a majority of our stuff currently is virtualized. But you have to recognize that virtualization still requires good management, good monitoring, and all the other controls in place, and that's key. And that's key whether we're managing those virtual capabilities ourselves or whether we're giving those virtual capabilities to a cloud vendor. So one of the key things is to actually have visibility into your applications so that you can monitor them. And that's something you've got to negotiate with your cloud vendor up front.
And do you also negotiate which physical machines the virtual machines end up on so that you can say, you can't see software, but you can sure point to a machine and know it's behind a cage and so on, knows that it has the right other security controls on it.
Yeah, and that's a case-by-case basis. But, yeah, there are opportunities for that if the system's really sensitive or has specific performance requirements.
And, Fred, yeah, what about virtualization? Does NIST have guidance there for itself and also in its relation to the cloud?
Actually, there is. And there is some virtualization guidance on securing a virtualized environment that NIST offers. I'm sorry, I don't remember the
publication
the
number.
Publication
yeah.
number, right? Right.
Wait, you don't have all of those memorized?
No, I'm afraid not.
It's 800-XX.
Right, exactly. So, So, of course, virtualization is going to play a huge role in cloud implementations, no doubt about it. So how we go about securing those is going to be critically important. And I think it still remains to be seen what types of security vulnerabilities may emerge from a massive deployment of that kind of technology. Again, no less safe right now than anything else.
We are speaking with Fred Whiteside, a project manager of NIST Cloud Computing Program, and Wolf Tombe, the chief technology officer at Customs and Border Protection. This is a Federal News Radio discussion about cloud computing and government, brought to you by General Dynamics IT. I'm Amy Morris. He's Tom Temin, and we'll be right back.
It's 9:41. Welcome back to our Federal News Radio discussion on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. I'm Tom Temin along with Amy Morris. We're talking about cloud computing in government, and this discussion is brought to you by General Dynamics IT. Our guests this morning are Fred Whiteside, project manager for the Cloud Computing Program at the National Institute of Standards and Technology, and Wolf Tombe, chief technology officer for Customs and Border Protection. And I wanted to revisit and go a little bit more into something we talked about earlier, and that is the suppliers themselves. And, Wolf, as you look on behalf of CBP at the vendor landscape, what are some of the parameters, qualities, offerings that you look for in a vendor? And let's talk about a site visit and what some of the things are that you can glean from when you go take a look at the data center.
Absolutely. So there are a number of things to look at, but the one thing I want to stress is while cloud offers a lot of incredible opportunity, there's no substitute for planning. You have to plan it like any other large IT project. You have to really understand what your requirements are and how that's going to drive your selection of a cloud vendor. So you'd mentioned site visits and site inspections. Not all cloud vendors will allow you to come onto their site and do an inspection. So that's probably going to be one of your very first questions. Is will you let me come in? Will you let me see the audits and the certification logs and capabilities?
And is that a deal breaker if they don't?
It can be, depending on what's being hosted. Let me give you an example. So we mentioned email as a service, and that sounds like a really easy thing to do and all, but you have to do your homework. So you have to know really what your SLAs are for your users around those requirements and what happens if they don't meet an SLA and how do you know? And if there is a degradation in service, do you have visibility into what's causing that degradation so you can know that it's not your network but the cloud capability? All that has to be thought out in advance. All that has to be put into your contract with your cloud vendor and discussed with your cloud vendor before you enter into any agreement. So email as a service, we were looking at a couple of public cloud capabilities to have that hosted, and one of them actually was telling us they thought it was a great thing. They said our archiving is immutable. It's good. Your messages will never go away. Well, guess what? That was a deal breaker for us, because if we have a classification spill and somebody sends sensitive information to an unclassed email account, we have to actually show that email was purged via NIST standards. Mm-hmm. That was a deal breaker, that one simple reference.
And they thought they were showing you something really great.
Yeah, they thought it was a great opportunity. Look, this is a huge value for you. It's like, not so.
So in a case like that, if there is data that is spilled or that is not supposed to be, if it's something gets out, who's responsible for that? Is that you? Is that the vendor? Who's in trouble?
Those are all the things you need to think out ahead of time and clearly put in your contract language.
So it depends on the contract.
It really does, and it depends on the dynamics of the application involved.
And Mr. Whiteside, of course, NIST has all this guidance on what a cloud is, even definitional type of guidance on what constitutes cloud computing. So there must be guidance that you have on what constitutes a good vendor.
Well, from a requirements perspective, NIST provides guidance on those types of SLA thresholds, and most of that kind of guidance is coming out of GSA.
Service level agreements.
Right. So we touch on service level agreements to some degree. GSA, I think, is obviously provides better guidance and has the lead on that type of guidance. But NIST is really focused on providing guidance for vendors to meet. And I think if if vendors, particularly in the ANA process, if you're familiar with 853 controls, they cover just about the entire gambit of securing a system, from business processes all the way through.
That's right. Technical, 853 was just revised last year, right? I think that's one of the latest ones to be revised in the last 18 months, anyway.
I believe, yeah, that's correct. I'm not exactly sure when that was finalized.
And do you have the sense that industry is paying attention to that?
Oh, absolutely.
Guidance?
Yeah, widely. Yeah, widely adopted. Yeah, sure. Certainly. So,
and we should also point out that guidance is available to industry that wants to go to cloud, not necessarily only government that wants to go to cloud.
Sure. Absolutely. But there are other organizations that are highly regarded as well that do provide guidance. But yeah, the NIST 853 controls seem to be be widely accepted. Yeah.
One thing I'd like to point out, especially for industry, is as the NIST definition for cloud is a really good definition. And the vendors who want to approach the federal space and offer opportunity, they really should go and read that, because that is what we're using as a definition, and we're going to ask questions based on that definition. So that's something they should really bone up on and know that they understand and that they can provide capability on.
Is the guidance subject to evolution?
Oh, absolutely. You'll see revisions of pretty much everything that comes out of NIST as the technology changes and as it shifts. I think NIST has always done a tremendous job of keeping pace with technology and as it evolves.
Now, there were some early entrants into the public cloud field, and they made famous announcements, and it got everybody excited. Since then, there seems to have been dozens of others. And, Wolf, are you finding that maybe some of the newer entrances or some of the less famous entrants into cloud computing are more aligned with the federal standards because they did come into it later in the game and didn't have a great big setup already for some other purpose before they decided to turn it over to cloud offering?
Well, yeah, I think there's often an advantage to somebody who gets started later in the game because they can leverage all the lessons learned from the people who came before them. But I want to recognize that some of the early adopters to cloud are doing some very impressive things, and they're coming in and they're talking FISMA controls and adherence to NIST guidance, and they're doing all the right things. So I think there's a lot of opportunity out there.
Yeah, and GSA has done an excellent job of capturing a lot of those lessons learned and making sure that those are being shared across the entire federal government. And that has really helped many agencies, like Wolf mentioned, who are falling behind these early adopters.
It's an important point. This isn't a bicycle wheel where you at NIST are the center spoke and radiating out to the other agencies. The agencies all have to, not all of them necessarily, but they do talk to each other and share best practices, do they not?
Absolutely, and that is the idea behind this entire program. It's sort of the cornerstone of this entire program, that sort of collaboration and communication between agencies, definitely.
And when you enter into an agreement, it seems like the service level agreement is, I mean, you're buying a service. Mm-hmm. And so the SLA is really the central document that seems to require the most energy. Would that be a fair way to put it?
Yeah, I think a good, solid, well-rounded SLA is critical to any cloud endeavor.
And how big is an SLA? Is it 25 pages or, I mean?
Well, it really depends on what you're trying to get hosted and the complexities of what's being hosted.
And in creating that, who do you involve from the agency?
Oh, well, obviously application owners. You may involve your business owner. What is their response time requirement from a mission perspective? Clearly, contracts and acquisitions and legal have to be involved in that. But I'd also recommend if you're not familiar with cloud capabilities, you might want to reach out and get some mentoring from a source that can provide you some insight, because there's a lot of complexity in terms of what you have to think of and when you're actually outside hosting one of your capabilities.
And hopefully that advice would be close to inherently governmental, but not quite there, so you
Correct.
Could use them.
Correct.
All right, we're speaking, it's 9:50, we're speaking with Fred Whiteside, Project Manager for the NIST Cloud Computing Program, and Wolf Tombe, Chief Technology Officer for Customs and Border Protection. This is a Federal News Radio discussion about cloud computing in government, brought to you by General Dynamics IT. I'm Tom Temin and Amy Morris. We'll be right back.
Good morning and welcome back to our Federal News Radio discussion on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. I'm Amy Morris, along with Tom Temin, talking about cloud computing in government. This is brought to you by General Dynamics IT. Our guests this morning are Fred Whiteside, the project manager at NIST Cloud Computing Program, and Wolf Tombe, the chief technology officer at Customs and Border Protection.
And we've just got a couple of minutes left, so I'm going to start with you, Fred Whiteside from NIST. Just summarize for us the important work NIST is doing, helping federal agencies get into cloud computing in a way that is beneficial to everybody.
Well, I mentioned earlier the publishing of the technology roadmap. That is scheduled to be released the first week of November, along with a workshop and forum, a three-day workshop and forum on, November 2nd, 3rd, and 4th. And also, you'll see a number of publications that are also supportive of that document that are coming out as SP 500 series SPs. So
all downloadable in PDF format,
absolutely.
Right from the NIST website.
Yeah, as always, right. I think that particularly for security, I think that this document will provide a lot of insight to federal managers and sort of validate some of their concerns and share with them some of the mitigation activities and mitigation technologies that are out there.
Okay, and Wolf Tombe, Chief Technology Officer at CBP, tell us where you're headed and what your lessons learned have been so far along the road to cloud.
Well, I think, as I mentioned before, we're headed for full cloud adoption, whether private or public or even at some point in the future, community or hybrid down the road. But one of the things I want to stress for people listening is that while you're excited about getting into the cloud, you have to have an exit strategy. And you have to be thinking about that before you get into the cloud with your vendor, and all that needs to be well thought out and again, put in your contract. So
you have to look at the end game almost first.
Exactly. You want to know how you're going to move to the next vendor.
Which is a perfect time to bring our discussion to a close. We'd like to thank our guest, again, Fred Whiteside, Project Manager for the NIST Cloud Computing Program, and Wolf Tombe, Chief Technology Officer for Customs and Border Protection. Gentlemen, thank you both.
Thank you.
For having.